everybody. This is Joyce Riley. We all know knowledge is power, and this is the
Power Hour.
That's right. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or sponsors of the radio station, but I tell you, our listeners are going to enjoy this next hour's guest. Welcome back to the second hour edition of the Power Hour. This is June 30th, 2009. If you're hearing this recorded, well, we did it on that date. Joining me today is Thomas Greco. He is a leading authority on free market approaches to monetary and financial innovation, including the cashless exchange systems, which I understand are beginning even as we speak, and some toll roads in Texas now. They're going to be required cashless systems. He is a former engineer, entrepreneur, college professor. He is a sought-after advisor and speaker at conferences around the world. He has written the books Money, Understanding, and Creating Alternatives in Legal Tender, New Money for Healthy Communities, Money and Debt, and a Solution to the Global Crisis. His website is reinventingmoney.com. Just go to today's guest and click on it. And I want to say thank you very much, Thomas Greco, Jr., for joining us in the Power Hour today.
Good morning to us. Thank you.
Now, there's a lot of things people can be doing with their time, but getting involved in such an intricate book or such thinking such as The End of Money and the Future of Civilization is not something that everybody does. I just have to ask you, what was it that drew your attention to really being ahead of your time in writing this book?
Well, I discovered more than 30 years ago that our money and banking system is seriously dysfunctional. And I have a background in education. I taught business administration in a business college for 14 years. And it was following that, actually, that I began to really learn about money and banking and what was going on. One of the major sources that opened my eyes to this whole picture was a booklet that was put out by the U.S. Congress. At that time, Wright Patton, congressman from Texas, was chairman of the House Banking Committee. And he commissioned a study that put together a booklet called Money Facts. And that was available from the U.S. Government Printing Office, along with the booklet that it was excerpted from, which was called A Primer on Money. So these volumes came directly from the U.S. government, from the Congress, that had been investigating the situation with the money and banking system. And I was astonished with what I read in those little booklets about how money actually works. And the whole subject of money has been obscured and obfuscated intentionally, I think, to keep people from understanding what's going on and to keep people from even thinking that they could possibly understand money. But really, money is quite simple when you get down to its essence. And money today is nothing but credit. Money has gone through an evolutionary process. In the old days, we used commodity money. That is, any commodity that was generally in demand that could be used as a medium of exchange. So I might not have any use for tobacco myself, but if it's in general demand, I might accept tobacco as a payment for whatever it is that I'm selling, knowing that I could pass it on to someone else in exchange for something that I want. So we've gone through that history with many different commodities serving the exchange function. Tobacco in the colonies of the United States before the Revolutionary War, that was quite common. Hides, bullets, nails, sugar, salt, various other commodities have served the exchange purpose. Typically, of course, we've seen that gold and silver, the precious metals, become the preferred commodities for exchange. But that was a primitive form of exchange, and it was still really basically a barter exchange of one good for another.
You know, then, I just wanted to add that, you know, your book is different. And what we're getting into here, you know, you go through the history of all of this, but we're going to get to some solutions. And I want to let the listeners know that there are a lot of solutions that you add here that is unlike a lot of books. But I have to commend Chelsea Green in publishing this book, because I was surprised when I received it. I was surprised that Chelsea Green had gone out on a limb to discuss the central banking and the rise of the money power, the new world order, the usury and the engine of destruction, as you define it, along with the question, can civilization be saved? So I have to commend them and you for writing this book. I'm just thrilled to see that Chelsea Green has published this and that listeners can now get this just about anywhere. It is an amazing book. You have really gone into the subject of money and the subject of solutions.
Well, thank you very much, Joyce. Yeah, Chelsea Green, this is the second book of mine that Chelsea Green has published. The first one in 2001 was called Money, Understanding and Creating Alternatives to Legal Tender. That also had a focus on solutions, but not to the extent that this one does. This one sets a broader historical and theoretical context and gets into more developed solutions based on the experience of the last several decades. But yes, solutions is what we need to focus on. And we can get into that now, or we can paint a little bit more of the background picture,
yeah,
if you wish.
Let's talk about the background. I just want people to know that it's not going to be just the problem issue here, but we are going to get into solutions a little bit later. But yeah, let's talk about it, because, you know, the rise of the central banks and the alteration of how they have changed, you know, they changed their name, but they didn't change what they were doing. And this has affected desperately our financial system right now. And of course, the average person on the street doesn't even know what the Federal Reserve Bank is.
Right.
They really don't. So go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So to continue the thread that I was talking about, the evolution of money, this is an important concept for people to understand, because we still use terminology that applies to commodity money, although we don't use commodity money anymore. Things like deposits, for example. You have a bank deposit. Well, what do you have deposited in the bank? All you have is a number on an account, which represents the credit that you have coming from the rest of the economy. So anyway, the second step was when banks would receive gold and silver deposits and then issue paper notes or warehouse receipts in return that represented that metal on deposit. And then people discovered that they really didn't need to pay for things using gold. They could pass on the bank notes and people would accept them readily, because the bank notes could be taken back to the bank and turned in for the gold or the silver. Mm-hmm. But then banks decided that people weren't coming for the gold, so they might as well issue more notes than they had gold to back it up. This is known as the fractional reserve system. And then eventually they stopped redeeming the notes for metal entirely. So now we're purely on a credit money system. Now, that's not a bad thing, because credit provides a flexible supply of the exchange medium. But the main point is that credit has to be issued on a proper basis. It has to be issued on the basis of some obligation that involves the delivery of goods and services to the market. Otherwise, the issuance of money becomes inflationary. And that's what we're seeing now with massive monetization of U.S. government debt, for example, which brings no new goods and services to the market, but it does put additional money into the economy. So the result of inflation of the money is the debasement of all the currency that's already in circulation and rising prices as a result. So what we have to realize is that the whole purpose of a central bank is to enable the government to spend beyond its means and to enable the bankers to collect interest on so-called loans, even though they don't loan anything. They basically create money by making two entries on their books. Mm-hmm. On the asset side of the balance sheet would be, let's say, your mortgage note for $200,000. And on the liability side of the balance sheet would be the bank's liability, which would be a deposit that they create to your account, which is money. And when we talk about a cashless society, we're not talking about simply the disappearance of paper as the medium of exchange. We're talking about the disappearance or the displacement of political money generally. And political money consists not only of Federal Reserve notes, but also of deposits in bank accounts. In fact, most of the money supply is represented by deposits in bank accounts.
Yeah, that's a term I've never heard of, political money.
Well, it's something that's spoken of in circles like the free money movement, because money has been politicized. And the central banking system, which has spread around the world, is the means of politicizing and monopolizing credit. So the prototype for that goes back more than 300 years to the Bank of England. At that time, King William III came to power in England, and he was fighting a war against France. And, of course, wars are very expensive propositions. He needed money to fight this war. William Paterson and some of his financier associates came to the king with a proposition, and basically the deal was this. They had said, we will give you the money you need to fight the war if you will give us, the Bank of England, the privilege of creating banknotes and lending them into circulation.
Mm-hmm. We've got a 4 minute break here. We're going to be right back with our guest, The End of Money and the Future of Civilization, Thomas Greco Jr. That's G-R-E-C-O, Thomas Greco Jr., ladies and gentlemen. After this 4 minute break, we're going to talk about money liberation. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the Power Hour.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw of free enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states, "It's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel." Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Money, it's a crime. Share it, share it, don't take a slice of my pie. Money,
that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Power Hour, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, our guest today is Thomas Greco Jr. He's written a book called The End of Money and the Future of Civilization. He's talking about the control of the machinery for creating money. Money has consistently been abused by those who have had the authority over it, but it's only within the last three centuries, he says, that the machinery of money and banking has been refined to enable levels of control approaching the absolute to be wielded on a worldwide basis by a handful of individuals. The divine right of kings. Are you speaking at the Federal Reserve Bank, sir?
Say that again.
Are you speaking of the central banks and the Federal Reserve there?
Well, yes, the banking establishment, the very top of the banking establishment, you have a small group of people who actually, by their control of money, are able to control economies and the politics around the world. They're not absolute, of course, but they're pretty close to it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen in the last 300 years the spread of the central banking system around the world, and virtually every country in the world has a central bank. In some cases, it's private. It's a private corporation, as our Federal Reserve Bank is. In other cases, the central bank is owned by the government, but the fact remains that the bankers are pretty much in control. It's not that the government controls the bank, it's that the bank controls the government for the most part.
That's an important statement right there, that the bank controls the government.
And we can see the beginnings of this battle in the United States right after the Revolutionary War. You know, the Federal Reserve is not our first central bank. We had a central bank right after the Revolutionary War in the form of the Bank of the United States that was founded by Alexander Hamilton in association with some of his cohorts, not only in the U.S., but also in Europe. And the first Bank of the United States had a 20-year charter. It was founded in 1791 and expired in 1811. And Congress narrowly missed renewing that charter in 1811. But then in 1816, the second Bank of the United States was founded, again with a 20-year charter, and it was to be the depository for the United States government, receiving all funds and making disbursements, but also had certain privileges that gave it much more power than any other bank. And there was a big debate about whether the government actually had the power to charter a bank. But it went ahead anyway, and the charter of the Second Bank of the United States was due to expire in 1836. But Nicholas Biddle, who was the president of the bank, thought that he could line up the votes in Congress to get the recharter bill passed early. However, there was a fly in the ointment here. Andrew Jackson was elected to the presidency in 1828, and in 1832, when he was campaigning for his re-election for his second term, the bank was an issue. Jackson was adamant against having a bank because he said it was a power that was vying with the government for control of the United States. And Congress did, in fact, pass the bill to recharter the bank, but Jackson vetoed it. And Jackson's message about that veto, I think, is a very important document in American history that all Americans should read, along with the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, because he makes the point that to allow this private money power to gain such a strong footing, we basically turn over our democratic government to an unelected group. So that is the situation that prevails pretty much around the world today.
You know, the situation we're all so aware of right now, and we feel so helpless about, though we are like glad to see that Ron Paul is attempting to get the Fed audited, to get some accountability for the central bank here in the United States. And I don't know, I'm not holding my breath that it's going to happen, though he's gotten a tremendous number of votes right now. But after this break, I really like the way you talk about, or you quote Richard Bakken saying, when the caterpillar calls the end of the world, the master calls a butterfly. And what is going to be the situation? Is it going to be the end of the civilization, or are we going through a major crisis to something more positive? We're going to talk to our guest about that after this three-minute break. Thomas Greco, The End of Money and the Future of Civilization. We'll be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us in the Power Hour today, and let you know that we're going to be closed on Friday. So we close at 4 p.m. every day at the Power Mall. We will be closed all day Friday. Now, we're going to be live on the air on Friday, but we will be closed on Friday for the July 4 Independence Day holiday. You know, we played Somewhere Over the Rainbow. That song came from, of course, The Wizard of Oz, and that is, of course, about money. Well, we're talking about the end of money and the future of civilization with Thomas Greco Jr. today. And I'm going to open up the phone lines because I want him to have a chance to tell us what his solutions are, because that's what's so unique about his book, is that he doesn't just talk about the problem. He talks about the solution. So I want to open up the phone lines, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. 9231. But I want to go back to the statement you quote Richard Bach, which I am such a fan of Richard Bach also, but you say, Mr. Greco, that what the caterpillar calls the end of the world, the master calls a butterfly. Can you possibly see a positive end to what is happening today in our financial crisis in this country?
Absolutely. I think this is a great opportunity that we have now to devolve power to the local communities and to create a more peaceful and just world. You know, the way I put it is we need to reclaim the credit commons. Basically, we give our credit to the banks, and then we beg them to lend some of it back to us at interest. So what we need to do is to take control of our money power, that is, to take control of our own credit and allocate it according to our own purposes to whomever we feel we should. So we have to do that by organizing on a local basis. You know, money and exchange are just too important to leave to bankers and politicians. And there are many ways that we can do that. We have a history of 40 years of commercial barter or trade exchanges. Barter is a misnomer here, but that's how they're generally known. Commercial trade exchanges provide business-to-business trading without the use of conventional money. So if you are a member of a trade exchange, and there are many of these around the country and around the world, like ITEX, IMS, Barter Card International. These are just a few of the hundreds of private companies that provide these credit clearing services. So if you're a retailer, let's say you own a restaurant, you can join one of these trade exchanges, and that will give you access to many other businesses in the community from whom you can buy office supplies, advertising, a whole range of goods and services. And in return, of course, you simply provide what you usually provide in your business, which is restaurant meals. And it's not a direct barter. It's an indirect thing, because when you sell something, your account is credited. It goes up. And when you buy something, your account is debited. It goes down. So this credit clearing process is facilitated by these commercial trade exchange businesses. Also, at the grassroots, we've had things like LETS, Local Employment and Trading System, which was originated about 25 years ago in Canada, and LETS systems have since spread around communities all over the world. So we have precedent for this kind of direct credit clearing between buyers and sellers. And perhaps the most successful example we have is called the Virbank, that's W-I-R, in Switzerland. And this was started during the 1930s in the midst of the Great Depression, when there wasn't enough Swiss francs in circulation for business to continue at normal levels. So the small and medium-sized business operators in Switzerland, some of them got together and started this Vir credit clearing circle. And that has been going now for 75 years, and it has been thriving and performing a great service. Recent figures indicate that there are about 60,000 businesses that are members of this Deere credit clearing circle, and they transact about $1.3 billion worth of goods and services every year without using Swiss francs or any political money at all. So these things can be replicated, and I think they will be replicated very quickly as people begin to become aware of their effectiveness.
You know, in your book, you refer to this as to unmoney. You call it unmoney. Now, can you give the names of those bartering groups again that you referred to? Because I think a lot of people would like to check that out on the Internet.
I will give you a couple websites that you can go to get a whole catalog of those.
Okay.
Go to barternews.com. It's a magazine that services that industry. And there is a listing of all of the trade exchanges that operate in the United States. Also, the trade association for that industry is called International Reciprocal Trade Association. That's IRTA. And I think it's... It might be IRTA.org. Google will quickly bring it up if you put in IRTA.
Okay. Excellent. And that is a tremendous idea. We've not even exposed that to the point where we, you know, can get people involved in it and comfortable with that idea. And that's something we need to do. I need to have somebody on from one of those organizations. Tell them that you heard Thomas Greco talking about this on the Power Hour, ladies and gentlemen, if you contact them or go to their website. And the book, The End of Money and the Future of Civilization, is available just about everywhere. Amazon. You can go to his website, click on today's guest, Reinventing Money. It's available just about at every bookstore also. Let me go to some callers here that are waiting in line to talk with you. Let me go to Chris in New Mexico. Chris, you're on the air with Thomas Greco. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Joyce.
Morning.
An hour with Mr. Greco is wholly insufficient. I beg you and Marita to schedule him again, like, really soon.
No kidding.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. This is a subject whose time has absolutely come. Mr. Greco, for those of us, you know, in order to get this ball rolling for so many of us, and for those of us who are in the position to do so, would it behoove us to just close our bank accounts and say enough of this?
No, you can't do that. This is going to be a transitionary process. We're going to have one foot in both worlds, so to speak, for quite some time. You know, we've become so dependent on the use of conventional money and conventional banks that we need to continue as we build the new. I would say that it might behoove you to put your money into a credit union rather than a bank. I've done that many years ago. And find ways to invest your money locally with organizations that are going to create greater sustainability and community self-reliance. Many credit unions are limited to consumer finance. There are some development credit unions that operate in different places, and they can allocate their funds to business improvement and business development.
You know, the phone lines are jammed right now. So let me say thank you very much, Chris, for the phone call. You're absolutely right. We need to have him on much, much longer than just 1 hour. Thank you very much, Chris, for the phone call. Jim in West Virginia, the phone lines are jammed, like I said. Go ahead, please, Jim.
I'll go quick. Adam Smith railed against these guys in 1776, Wealth of Nations. The dollar is defined as a measure of gold or silver. Federal Reserve notes aren't dollars. They're counterfeits. They're stealing trillions. If we were to convict them of counterfeiting and take their stolen assets with criminal forfeiture, what would that do for our so-called national debt to these counterfeiters? I'll listen.
Good question, Jim. Your response, Mr. Greco.
Well, it's true. To a large extent, what the Federal Reserve is doing is counterfeiting money. When they monetize U.S. government debt, that's legalized counterfeit. And there's a question as to whether it's legal at all, of course. But the courts have supported the central banking system throughout, and I think there's very little we can do about that. I don't have much confidence that we can solve this problem through the political process. The political process has been thoroughly taken over by the money power. So it's going to take independent, voluntary, private initiative to create exchange systems and finance systems that are independent of the U.S. dollar, the Federal Reserve note, and the central bank.
You know, I could not agree with you more. It's up to us to initiate these independent systems, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go to Lloyd in Nebraska. Lloyd, you're on the air with Thomas Greco. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I have a question. Is your guest familiar with the Guernsey Island Marketplace?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
How does your program fit in with that?
Okay, first of all, would you define the Guernsey Island Marketplace, Mr. Greco?
Well, the Guernsey experiment in money goes back to the 19th century. Guernsey had its own money system separate from Britain, and basically they created money to build a market and issued their own notes into circulation to pay for the construction of that market, and then received back those notes as payments, rental payments, on the market stalls. That's a way that government can finance capital projects by issuing its own money into circulation. And to some extent, that can be effective. In my book, I prescribe what governments ought to do and how they should be limited in their issuance of money. And this is too much for us to get into at the moment, but I will say that there is a role for governments to play, especially at the local level, but it needs to be strictly limited.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll tell you, we have the best callers in the world, the smartest callers. Excellent question, Lloyd from Nebraska. He's a rancher. Boy, that is excellent. Chris in Florida, you're on the air with Thomas Greco. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I interviewed a president and CEO of a local private monetary system called the Orange Bee Private Money System. This is a James E. Buddy Hooper. He said that he didn't like the idea that the barter system was being confused with his brand of private monetary system, and it sounds kind of like what you're describing, because the Orange Bee, by the way, that's Orange Bee, like a bumblebee, orangebee.com, and you can see the system for yourself. But the problem I had is that number one, there's exclusivity or monopoly, so that, say, there's only one Chinese restaurant in an area that can become a member. And number two, this Orange Bee currency gets interest on every transaction. I don't know if that's the type of private money system you're talking about. So it is a debt-based money system, though it's at a fixed rate. It's not because of inflation. And if you'd like to check out that interview that I did with him on June 4th of this year, you can check it out on my website, liberationstation.weebly.com.
Okay, and do you have a question, though, Chris, for our guest?
Well, yes, the exclusivity issue means that when these private monetary systems, wouldn't that mean that only a certain type of a business in an area in a given radius is given exclusivity, so that...
Okay. All right.
The answer is not necessarily. There are some commercial trade exchanges that do that because they emphasize the market advantages of membership. But ideally, it would be an open membership kind of thing that you wouldn't limit it to particular clients. But in any case, you know, whether there is exclusivity being practiced by a trade exchange or not, there is competition in the industry because there are other trade exchanges. If you can't join one, you join another. And so that's the point, is to liberate the exchange process and open up the marketplace for many different operators and many different exchange systems to operate side by side.
Yeah, the issue is, I think the issue is much bigger than that. Thank you very much, Chris from Florida. Jim in PA, you're on with our guest today, Thomas Greco. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Joyce, you have such a nice warmth. Thomas, if you could just make a quick comment on this, I'll just make a quick statement. Excellent topic. Thomas, whether it's on the control of money or these other, there are a lot of Illuminati controls, education, politics, spirituality, religion, et cetera, doesn't this, again, not to be the fly in the ointment, to change this monetary system, isn't it going to take, a high majority or the vast majority of the American body politic and the world population in general to not only start to take in this information but also to act on it?
I don't think it's going to take a huge number. What we have to do is to inform enough entrepreneurs to begin to organize these exchange systems and to optimize their design. Right now, even the commercial trade exchanges that are operating have a number of shortcomings, and I have a whole chapter in my book about that and how they can optimize and move to the next level. The market for their services is potentially enormous, but they have limited themselves by practices such as exclusivity that the previous caller mentioned, and by emphasizing the marketing advantages over the financial advantages. But as they begin to realize what their real value proposition is, these exchanges will explode in terms of membership and amount of business transacted within the exchange.
Yeah, Thomas, thanks for your answer.
Hey, thank you very much for the phone call, Jim and PA. Let me just tell you that the end of money and the future of civilization, he spends a lot of time on the commercial trade exchanges, on web-based trading platforms, on the role of governments in establishing economic and financial stability, along with this new thought that we're talking about here on independent money. So I would encourage you to get the book. We'll be right back after this three-minute break. Stay tuned.
Dear Mr. Johnson, we're sorry to inform you your request for a second loan has been refused.
Oh, whoa.
And the board of directors up in the city has instructed us to take the farm from you.
Oh, man, does that give you goosebumps, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Power Hour. Excellent choice there, Don. And welcome back to the Power Hour, and we thank you for joining us with Mr. Thomas Greco today, The End of Money and the Future of Civilization. Like I said, he deals in solutions, which is so refreshing, ladies and gentlemen. And in the appendix, he also includes a model membership agreement for a credit clearing service. So there are going to be a lot of you interested in this book. It's available just about anywhere. You can go to Amazon and get it or any bookstore. Let me go back to the callers here quickly. Johnny in Texas, you're on the air with Thomas Greco. Go ahead, please.
Good morning out there. It's Johnny here in Channelview.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I was in the first cab in the 25th Infantry, and we had multiple times we had the MPC change. I got an IQ of 3.2. I see the world falling apart, and this is another reason why we need to say no to that and get gold and silver. Because I hear buy, sell, and trade a certain amount for a certain amount of wages, no cash. Everybody's going to like it and take it, and I see not necessarily 666. But we don't need a chip. We take a retina scan.
Yep.
And a fingerprint.
That's
and a computer,
right.
And nobody's money's working, everybody's going to take it. I like it, but paranoid?
Johnny, let me go to Thomas Greco. What about the use of gold and silver?
Well, typically in a hyperinflationary situation, people flee to precious metals. And we have the prospect of hyperinflation now with the massive budget deficits that the government is running and planning to run over the next several years. Precious metals can be helpful to some extent in protecting one against inflationary price rises, but I don't think that's the ultimate answer. The ultimate answer is to organize credit clearing associations in our local areas. That empowers us collectively, and we have to work together because exchange is a social process, and we have to enable ourselves by using something that we have. You know, I have no gold, I have no silver, and getting it would be very problematic for me. So in order to exchange my goods and my services for others, I have to use something I have. And all I have is the services that I'm able to give. And that's the same situation with most other people.
Your comment about it would be very problematic for you to get. And why do you say that?
Well, because you need money to buy gold.
Oh, okay. But okay, I didn't.
And if you don't have any money, you can't buy gold.
Bingo. Okay. Let me go quickly to David in California. David, we've still got all these callers that want to talk to you. David in California, you're on with Thomas Greco. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, morning, Joyce and Thomas. Good show. I actually ran for Congress on this platform back in 1980, and it's very, very brave, bright idea. I live out in California now, and after the 1989 earthquake, when FEMA didn't show up, they didn't show up for a couple of months. The city was high and dry, starved for any input of cash, and so they created their own local currency called the Santa Cruz Monarch. And it worked quite well for a certain amount of time, and it ended up as a sort of a business barter system. But essentially, I wonder if your guest could talk a little about the basic concept of the need for, you know, this need goes all the way back to Croesus, and probably you can read about it to some degree with Moses. But the idea that currencies can be taken as an exchange rate and taken back to foreign countries.
Okay, we'll be right back after this 1 minute, 10-second break. We've only got 5 more minutes with our guest today, Thomas Greco. Back in 1 minute, 10 seconds. Has not our money or the study of money been a big lie? Well, not when you talk to somebody like Thomas Greco. He looks at money for what it really is in the end of money and the future of civilization. And where do we go from here? We've got a lot of callers. Now, we had David in California. Did you want to address what David in California had to say regarding the Santa Cruz monarch or that independent monetary system?
Well, certainly that kind of crisis situation is an opportunity for local entities, including local governments, to put their own currencies into circulation, and there's much precedent for that. But I want to mention, before we run out of time, Joyce, that there is a lot of information on my blog, beyondmoney.net, beyondmoney.net. And the program that I'm proposing that communities follow is a regional economic development plan based on a mutual credit clearing system. That's chapter 16 in my book, and it's excerpted on my blog. If you go to the blog, you'll see it as one of the top posts, and you just click on it, and you can see what I'm proposing that communities do. And if several communities begin to follow that plan and organize those mutual credit clearing systems, then eventually they can be networked together. Just as our microcomputers are networked together on the Internet, and we can engage in trading over a wide geographical region.
Excellent, excellent. Let's go to Steve in California. Steve, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with Thomas Greco. Go ahead, please.
Hey, it's actually Steve from Canada, but that's okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
That's a big deal.
I was a part of a barter system with my small business for a number of years called Trade Bank. And the biggest obstacle that I had as a small business owner is the majority of my bills were public utilities, rent, mortgage payment, telephone bills, those sorts of things. And salaries. And the bulk of my bills were those. And I mean, I had all kinds of money built up in my account where I was, you know, but I could never spend the money because the bulk of my bills were not, you know, how are you going to get government entities such as the public utilities and telephone and government entities to go along with this when they want to control the money end of things?
That's right. Now, Steve, you mentioned a really important point. A lot of people say that I built up so much money in my barter system I couldn't use it. Your response,
yes.
Mr. Greco?
Yes, well, that's a common problem, and part of it results from the fact that many trade exchanges aren't properly run. They inflate their own internal currency, so to speak, by offering incentives to draw new memberships. The other thing is that any network is useful to the extent that it is large and broad, and a trade exchange that has only a few members and a narrow range of goods and services available is not going to be highly useful. So the dilemma is how do you get an exchange to be big enough to reach critical mass and to involve a wide enough variety of goods and service providers to make it really useful to the
That's right.
local economy and to the member.
And let me go quickly to Chris in Florida. I had one question I did not allow him to answer and I apologize. Chris, you're our last caller. Go ahead, please.
Well, are these private trade exchanges based on the Federal Reserve note and therefore do they report their earnings to the IRS as this orange fee I was mentioning?
They are not based on the Federal Reserve note in the sense of the currency being created. If you look at the internal credits in a trade exchange, they result from a line of credit or an overdraft privilege that's granted to certain members that are deemed creditworthy. However, as far as tax reporting is concerned, they are considered to be equivalent to U.S. dollars, and there is a tax liability.
Thomas Greco, thank you so much for joining us in the Power Hour today. It's been awesome. We're going to have you back on if you can, if you would agree to come back
sure,
on in the near future.
To.
Thank you so much. The end of money and the future of civilization. Oh, get it, ladies and gentlemen.